The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Weekday evenings on FM 101.5 and AM 1400, The Patriot. It's 6 o'clock talk with Daryl Wood. Host Daryl Wood brings you the day's news and trending topics as only he can, with a unique blend of conservative opinion, constitutionalism, and thought-provoking analysis. Join the conversation. 6 o'clock talk with Daryl Wood. A daily look at the news in a way you won't hear anywhere else. Tune in to 6 o'clock talk with Daryl Wood on FM 101.5 and AM 1400, The Patriot. Or stream at patriotdetroit.com.
You are in what part of the country?
Southwest Colorado.
Wonderful. How are you picking us up?
Oh, I stream you guys on my iPhone every day.
Fantastic.
I am a resident of Sterling Heights, but I frequently come to Southwest Colorado.
I am just thrilled to be hearing from you out there in Colorado. Continue to listen, tune in again, and call at your earliest convenience. Godspeed.
Run to Win with Daryl Wood, Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. on Faith Talk Detroit.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we will be interviewing Dr. Robert Wolf, a Detroiter, who has written a book, Not a Real Enemy, The True Story of a Hungarian Jewish Man's Fight for Freedom. It's a memoir, biography of his father's escape from Hungary, from all the different perils. This is dynamite stuff. Second half of the show, we'll be talking about the portion of the week, which is the portion of Tzav, which can be found in the book of Leviticus. We have Jewish music throughout, really nice stuff that we found this week. You're going to be very pleased with the music. And, of course, we'll be closing with a dynamic, very poignant Hasidic story. Okay, you there, Robert?
Yes, I am.
Okay, cool. Thank you. We're going to start right now. Okay, thanks for your patience.
Thank you, and Shabbat Shalom. Thanks for having me.
But you're a doctor, you have patience. Let's start. No, how many times have you heard that in the last how many years? Yeah, never. Okay.
Not in a while, but I use it myself. Patience is it's a virtue. It's definitely in the book industry, too, for sure.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. And with that, we'll welcome Robert Wolf to our airways. How are you today, Robert?
I'm well, thank you. How are you? And thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you. Very humbled and grateful.
Okay. Thank you. Very good. Thank you. Okay. So some more obvious questions to start off with. Okay. The book is published, Not a Real Enemy. It's published by Amsterdam Press. And when you go to Amsterdam Press, what do you find? It's an entire website of Holocaust memoirs and biographies. So what about Not a Real Enemy, the true story of a Hungarian Jewish man's fight for freedom, did you feel it was necessary to add into the corpus of Holocaust literature, Robert?
That's a great question. Wow, that's a first question, and it's a great one. I want to say it's Amsterdam Publishers, and I got to give a shout out to Lisbeth Hink, who runs the show there. And she cranks out two or three books a month that are Holocaust related. And she was literally a shoestring catch, bottom of the ninth find as far as accepting the book, as we try to vet out agents and publishers ourselves. That would be me and my co-author and I. The thing that's different about Not a Real Enemy, which we've won four awards, which I don't even know what to do with that yet, but we can talk about that in a minute too, is that it not only covers Hungary during the Holocaust, but it also covers communist Hungary subsequently, all the way through the Hungarian Revolution in 1956, after which my parents escaped, after being frontliners in that war that not a lot of people know about, a 2.5-week war where 3,000 people died, countless injured and refugees. Mom ran the blood bank as a med student, and my dad was an OBGYN who had to double down as a trauma surgeon. So he was pretty much up 24/7 for 2.5 weeks. So treading back, the book, which is a history book of Hungary, not only the Holocaust, but communist Hungary as well, and all the issues that they had with that. It goes back to World War One, where my dad's father, who was a dentist, was a captain on a ship, on the Red Cross ship on the Black Sea during World War One. So then things quieted down during the 20s, and it covered my dad's childhood and the issues that Jews had in Hungary about worrying about the subsequent leadership after World War One. Admiral Horthy, not considered friendly to Jews, the White Terror, the Red Terror. You really needed a program to see who the Jews were afraid that was in office. So they weren't trusting of whoever leadership was. They always felt that there was some inherent prejudice against them. So it covers a lot of that. Plus, it's my dad's biography, and plus it's the trials and tribulations of his parents and his family. There's no sugarcoating in the book. It covers it just the way my dad wrote it as an autobiography back in the 70s, when he finally got established in Detroit, where he also became an OBGYN. That's another thing that's unusual about the book. My dad redid his residency in the United States and delivered 10,000 babies in the Mount Clemens, Detroit area. And I think that's redemption big time after everything that happened. It covers his parents being hauled off to Auschwitz and dying. And we had eyewitness chronicles of what happened to them exactly. My mom's grandfather, unfortunately, a rabbi, also perished at Auschwitz. So we cover a little bit of that. And my dad was a four-time escape artist, which is another thing that, I mean, I throw that in. It's usually my first line. But there's so much about this book. It's so in-depth that doesn't just say it's not just a – and I hate to say not just a Holocaust book, because they're all wonderful. And believe me, Amsterdam Publishers, I highly recommend many, many of their books. They're very, very good quality, and she vets them out carefully. And I'm very grateful to be a part of that. So every book in her collection has its own little twist and turn. Some are about music, some are about singing, some are about construction, engineers, people that went to fight in different countries more than once, all kinds of little twists and turns. As my book does, too. The book has many, many twists and turns and many miracles, and that's why I decided to publish it in the first place, because I couldn't just let it sit on a disc or a computer in an office. I wanted to share it with the world, and here we go. So it's out.
Okay. Who chose the title, Not a Real Enemy? Was it you or your dad?
No. Actually, my original title was The Hungarian Papillon, The Hungarian Butterfly, after the famed escape artist. We've all seen the Steve McQueen movie, and I think there was a redo, very famous story. But unfortunately, the audience under 50 years old would probably not understand that reference. So my original title was Hungarian Papillon, or Hungarian Butterfly, Dad's Story. Another title that I entertained was The Sixth Book of Moses, because all the miracles that happened in the book, and my dad's name was Moshe ben Yosef. I'm Eliezer Yosef ben Moshe, so very proud of that, as Moses is one of my biblical heroes for sure. But Not a Real Enemy was my co-author, Janice Harper. Shout out to her, wonderful book writer, wonderful coach. Made this book into something really special. She also has a Michigan affiliation. She's a PhD from Michigan State, anthropology, but writing is her love, and she really helped with this book in a million ways. But Not a Real Enemy was a title that she came up with because before my dad's last escape in 1956, he snuck into the medical staff office at this point, right before his fourth escape. So his risk tolerance was huge at this point. Sneaks in between the security guards and looks at his dossier to make sure that there's nothing hanging over his head in case they got caught or arrested trying to escape the country. And there was nothing really on him except to say he wasn't a communist sympathizer, but they describe him, the Russians, in their arrogance, as not a real enemy. And in fact, they were the real enemy, because my parents loved Mother Hungary, but they had two good people, a doctor and a medical student, leaving the country because they didn't buy into Nazi Hungary and communist Hungary. They were very patriotic and loyal to Mother Hungary, as the United States and Israel as well. So, in fact, they were a real enemy, and that's the irony. And that theme kind of resonates itself throughout the book, that my dad's always on the run. He's starving. He's in a forced labor camp. He was actually in many, two of which he escaped from. And the poor guy, you know, he's just a Jewish man with a lot of intelligence and a lot of intelligence and guts and heart. And he lived by that integrity. And so always on the run, never knowing where he's going to end up, staying to sleep to get his next meal, and finding out months after his parents had perished what had happened. So the poor guy was not a real enemy in the first place, but the way they described him, they lost two good people from the country that, let's say if the United States had taken over Hungary rather than Russia after World War II, I probably wouldn't be born and raised in Michigan, and I'd probably been a Hungarian citizen all my life. And so that's another irony of it. But so it just, I mean, the title is, I don't know how she came up with that other than that. And it's the title of a chapter, too, of the chapter where he does actually go into the office to find out what his dossier says. So it's a chapter title, and it just resonates throughout the book. But that's kind of how we thought this was a good title.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so you mentioned four escapes. Could you just list the four, and then we'll talk about them?
Okay, his first escape was actually the one part of the story when I first read it maybe 30 years ago that I remember the most. It was his, they thought that this March, my dad had just gotten back from the hospital after a foot infection, wherein the doctor, this is a little spoiler, the doctor said to him in the hospital, it doesn't matter if we treat your foot infection or not, you're going to be dead soon anyway. Can you imagine that? So this is a doctor who says this to my father. So he gets back to his company, and he and his best friend Frank decide they were marching them towards Austria. It was approaching the end of the war, and they didn't know what was safer for Jewish people, depending on who won the war. They didn't know if Hungary or Austria was a safer place for them, and so they were on another one of many long marches, and they just decided to just take off. They timed it right, and they were in the middle of the mountains, in the middle of the foothills, in the cold. And all-out foot race and an amazing, miraculous escape. So that was the first one. Ended up going to Budapest. Their second escape, they were right downtown Budapest. They escaped out of a little dog pound, as they called it, because they got arrested. Somebody double-crossed them and took them to the dog pound, as they called it, recollected, escaped forced laborers. And with strategy, they managed to escape. And the timing and the luck of it all, it's unbelievable how they got out in front of Nazi headquarters in Budapest and escaped again. My dad's third was he was a medical student, and he made it all the way to Austria, and he was cloak and dagger stories. He was arguing with an armed Russian soldier, lying about why he was going to Austria, claiming he was going to fix X-ray equipment, and got away with it. I mean, he the guts on this gentleman, my dad, is unbelievable. I mean, what he had, and he made it. He actually he could have escaped the country, but he was worried about getting arrested and the fear of reprisal and decided to turn back. And he actually went back to medical school and was on call the next night. And nobody even missed him. Nobody even knew he was gone. So he could have taken off. And but who knows where he would have ended up in Austria. And then their fourth and final escape was after the Hungarian Revolution, 1956. Like I said, this was late in the fall. And they had had enough. Two wars, endless anti-Semitism, persecution. The communists were not much better to the Jewish people than the Nazis, short of corralling them and taking them off to kill them. And they had it. So a side note, they end up in Austria where the book ends. But we could do a part two of the harrowing times between their trip back to the United States and having to adjust to a new country and all that. But they had enough. And so they met my mom's stepfather. My mom's parents got divorced and remarried. They actually got divorced to save the family and separated to different parts of the world. So it's just save the family name, if you can believe that. So they both got remarried. More stories about that. But in the end, my mom's mother and stepfather wanted them to move to Israel in 56 when they finally got out of Hungary. But Israel was in the middle of the Sinai War, and my mom and dad decided, you know, two wars is enough. So they favored the United States, which is where they always wanted to end up. So they did. And I'm grateful for that, although I would have been very happy being an Israeli citizen because Israel is such a beautiful country. I've been there many times. I'd go back in a heartbeat, wars or not, and I never felt safer in the Holy Land. But the United States, I was glad to be in Michigan, too. Wonderful state, wonderful friends, and still have many good friends in the area, and I'm very grateful for that. So,
okay, our guest today is Dr. Robert Wolf, who's written a book, Not a Real Enemy, The True Story of a Hungarian Jewish Man's Fight for Freedom. So you're an only child. Did you grow up with the story of your father's harrowing life from basically, it sounds like, 1914 to 1956?
Not really. My mom and dad educated all their friends. They were history educators and Holocaust educators throughout their lives, more so in the second half of my parents' life than the first half, as you know, as pre-med and then medical school and then a career and family. So I did read the manuscript once. But didn't really think much of it except that first escape. But when I finally read it, Dad passed in 97, unfortunately. Mom passed in 2016. And then I took another look at the book in 2018. Like I said, my dad's autobiography converted to a bio by me and then 20 edits. So, yeah, it became much more important to me the last 5-10 years, and especially since I took on the project of converting my dad's book. But, yeah, I got a little bit saturated with it, too, sometimes. My mom loved to talk about it, the history. They really didn't have much sign of PTSD, whereas they really could have. My mom had it a little bit easier during World War II. She and her mom and grandparent and grandmother were hiding in farmland pretty much, so they didn't have such a harrowing time. Except you're still scared for your life on a daily basis, especially in some quiet farmhouse in the middle of nowhere. My dad was too occupied, too scared to be scared. If that makes sense, I mean, just too busy to even just living on instinct and things like that. So. Slowly but surely, yeah, they educated me more and more about it. And after Mom died and I picked up the book again, I got the zap. It sort of summoned me. The book summoned me, and I read the book again. I said, wow, I can't just leave this book on a computer. I probably just said that earlier, but I just wanted to share it because I couldn't believe the major. I'm lucky to be around. My dad was lucky to make it. And that's the big theme in the book, too, is people will feel for my dad. They'll feel that they could be in my dad's shoes. And it was the draw for me, and it actually changes people about anti-Semitism, Jewish or otherwise. It's a book that can change your attitude, and I hope we have a lot more people read it, so it will help over time fight anti-Semitism through education and lectures and talks, radio interviews, whatever it is, book signings.
Okay, your vision is for this that it doesn't stop with just the publishing of a memoir. But you'd like to see this become sort of like a social phenomena in fighting anti-Semitism and some of the other ills of modern society. So how would you use then this book, Not a Real Enemy, the True Story of a Hungarian Jewish Man's Fight for Freedom, as a vehicle for or to achieve those goals, Robert Wolf?
Well, we're doing it. We're doing it now. I'm working 10, 12, 14-hour days trying to recruit people to buy into the fight against anti-Semitism. That's not a side thing. That's just part of the book itself. I've done 17 TV interviews. This will be my third radio interview, and I'm very grateful again. 34 podcasts and counting, 30-some book signings and book talks, including, I'm very proud and humbled to announce, I'm doing a 2-day book signing next month at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. Very humbling, very privileged and proud to do that. That same week, I'm doing a talk for the Institute for the Study of Global Anti-Semitism and Policy. These are people that are experts in the field. They're from Oxford, England. They've already invited me to their meeting and their annual meeting in the fall, which I'd like to go. And the lady orchestrating it is she works at the Holocaust Center in New Delhi, India, of all places. I didn't even know that existed. So. We're really becoming more international. These are people that this is all they do. And I just bought into it. I'm working social media left and right. I've got 45,000 connections. It's probably almost ad nauseum. I mean, I'm going to burn people out of the book. But once they've read the book and they've done a review, that's as far as I can hope for people to do. But the next step is either get me to talk in front of classrooms, in front of any university. And believe me, I'm trying. I've pitched everybody, the L.A. Holocaust Museum, the New York Jewish Heritage Museum. I've sent a copy to Spielberg. My mom was in the Shoah movie. She participated in that, which is amongst many other people. But he's done with those projects. I got a note back from him, which was great. These are long shot pitches, but the average, like your audience here, I mean, if one or two people from your own audience said, oh, he'd be a good speaker at my synagogue, well, I sure would be, and please invite me, because I'd be happy to come. I was well received. I'm talking to Zekelman now. Hopefully we'll work something out with them soon. That I know a lot of people that work there. A lady from Zekelman actually did a great review. I've got a good friend who's friends with the rabbi there. He knows who you are. It's fantastic. It's fantastic stuff. We did the Illinois Holocaust Museum. We did a presentation there. A Phoenix area Greek Orthodox Church was a great experience. I want more and more of those. And there is rejection. There's a wait list in a lot of places because, like I said, there's a lot of other great books out there. And I urge people to read as many as they can. I don't want people to get too saturated with the topic, but right now it is an important topic, even more so, as we all know.
Okay, let's. We don't have a whole lot more time left in this. This is actually pretty amazing that what you've done. So the Jewish, for some reason, Detroit became a center for the remnants of the Hungarian Jewish community. There is a large contingent of Jews who trace their lineage back to Hungary. In fact, the Holocaust, you mentioned the Zekelman Holocaust Memorial, that was initially started as Sharis HaPleta, the gates of the refugees, which was started by specifically Hungarian Jews. So it's the idea of 1956 is not really unusual to Detroiters, but if you could just explain what was so unusual about the 1956 Hungarian Revolution that takes a prominent part of a real enemy, please, Robert Wolf.
I don't. They kind of walked into it. My parents were at a movie when that war broke out. The war was started by young kids. I mean, college students and young people, many of them who had passed away. It just seems that, I mean, if you're Hungarian born and you know Hungarian history or you're a historian, you know a lot more about the revolution probably than I do. I mean, I know what I know. And between my co-author and me and historians that we've hired, we picked up as much as we could about the Hungarian Revolution. It's not just a history book, but it's how the revolution started, that of course they had enough of the communist regime. And it just ended badly for the Hungarians because truthfully, for the last 100 years, I feel badly for the Hungarian people. They've never been able to step on their own ground and live their own, even with Orban now. I mean, my parents have a friend named Orban, and it's not the same guy. This guy's, I don't know, he's so right that he makes Trump look like Bernie Sanders. And that's just a bad joke of mine because I'm not real political in either direction. I'm more of a center guy, but no, it just shows the perils of the communist world. And you know, we talk about it in I do book talks too, and we talk about how Russia hasn't changed much. You know, they invade Ukraine. The war is 2 years in now, and people dying every day still, and it's disgusting. It's unacceptable. I just you know, Americans want to intercede a little bit. But the parallel is the American government still has to protect their own people, and they can only do so much. And with Putin and his crazy threats, and we flash back to then because the war was shorter in Hungary. I mean, it's a good thing and bad thing. The bad thing is communism persisted for many, many years afterwards because they lost badly. But at least more people weren't dying. But they still suffered under communist rule. So the whole thing just gives you a bad taste in your mouth and realizes that the difference between the good world and the dark world, right from wrong. And I just can't stress that point enough. I hope the Ukraine war ends soon. I hope the Israeli war ends soon, and we get back to some semblance of normalcy in this world. You know, 98-99% of people that I know think normally. They think with peace and family and careers, making a living, enjoying whatever short time we have on this planet of ours. But it's the one percenters. It's always these. The Osama bin Ladens, the Pol Pots, the Adolf Hitlers that ruin it for everybody. And then we start all over again, and here we are again. So I'm fighting it peacefully. I'm fighting it through education and talk, meeting people like you, which, again, I'm grateful, and just sharing the story. And four awards, all these accolades that I don't even know what to do with because I'm very proud of it. But the important thing is that people are recognizing our good work and our important work and letting me spread the message about it. Ultimately, maybe a movie. Many people said this book should be a movie. And I always say, from your mouth to God's ears, if it were ever to become a movie, maybe not my lifetime, but down the road, wonderful. And then that would send people back to the book. And then hopefully more people buy into it, just like Schindler's List and Anne Frank's Diary and the Pianist, all great, great stories.
All those, yes, indeed. Okay, our guest today has been Dr. Robert Wolf, has written a book, Not a Real Enemy, The True Story of a Hungarian Jewish Man's Fight for Freedom. It's published by Amsterdam Publishing. and you can get it on Amazon, wherever you get your real good books. And reads like a novel, I will say that. And we want to wish you continued success and keep us apprised of what's going on, Robert.
I sure will. Thank you very much, Rabbi, for your time and your attention. And I really, really appreciate the invitation. God bless you, and God bless your charge, too. And thank you for sharing this. And I'm most grateful.
Okay. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. It's time for some music. It says with a pretty upbeat interview. So we're going to do some upbeat music. This is Lipa Schmelzer. It's called Neshama, which really talks about how we really thank God for giving our soul back every single day. It's a real cute tune. I like it. Let's listen.
Oy, 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 oy
all know there's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813. That's 800-603-1813, or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, this is a really cute song. This the artist is Leiby Falkowitz, who's making a name for himself. He's been around the block a couple times and has a good voice. The song is called Bane Chaya, and when a person has, he says that when you want to wish somebody best, you should wish that you wish them with Bane Chaya Mezoina, that they should be blessed with children, life, and sustenance. And so that's what we're wishing people, to be blessed with children, life, and sustenance.
Chayim zoyne v'siyat d'shmaya ibaris baris gife in hoyde ma'alye bun chayim zoyne v'siyat d'shmaya ibaris baris gife in hoyde ma'alye. When a chaver macht a simche, trinken. When a chaver macht a simche, trinken. When a chaver macht a simche, wischt man. Oy l'chaim, oy l'chaim. When a chaver macht a simche, trinken. When a chaver macht a simche, trinken. When a chaver macht a simche, wischt man. Oy l'chaim, oy l'chaim. Yate dishmaye Ibaris baris gife in hoire malje
un khaye mezoine
un khaye mezoine
yate
dishmaye Ibaris baris gife in hoine malje ey ven khave macht das simche. Singt man, wenn a chave macht a simche. Trinkt man, wenn a chave macht a simche. Wünscht man, eile chayem.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mycosup.com.
That's MI for Michigan, KO for kosher, and SUP for supervisors, mycosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This is a very unusual song. It's a Purim melody, and it's done by members of the IDF Rabbinut, which means the chaplaincy corps. So evidently there's chaplains, maybe there's some cantors in there, but it's done very well. It's still the week after Purim, so we get to play some Purim music. It's fine. No one's going to tell me not, so let's listen. New Year approaching, why go anywhere else for your holiday shopping when you can go to The Grove? Fully renovated, The Grove is located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696. At The Grove, you'll find the largest selection of kosher foods and wines in Michigan. Looking for fresh, round holiday challahs, honey cake, or exotic fruit for the New Year? The Grove has it. The Grove has the freshest produce, gourmet dairy, deli, and meats. They even have a kosher bakery and hot takeout right on the premises. It's The Grove on Greenfield Road and 696 for all your shopping needs. The Grove is now in Passover mode now that Purim is over, and you can get all your Passover needs, including shmura matzah and Passover. They have Passover cake and Passover things. Probably, like my mother used to say, things you don't need a whole year. They have that too. The biggest selection of wine for your four cups. And we talk, if you want to know about kosher wine, you could listen to last week's show to Jay Buxbaum and talk about what you should do for Passover for the four cups. That's all at The Grove. Our seasonal sponsor. Thank you so much. Okay, up. We are now at to our monologue. This portion of the week is Tzav, which can be found in the book of Leviticus, chapter 6 and following. Very interesting mitzvah here. Most of the book, these portions specifically, the beginning of the book of Leviticus, talk about various sacrifices. Kind of stuck right in the middle between a couple of sacrifices is an interesting concept. In order to have a sacrifice, you have to have a fire. And in order to have a fire, you have to have fuel. So what did people do? People donated wood to the temple. They're like, yeah, of course, right? And there's even all kinds of provisions as to when the what between when this date and this date, because they didn't want the wood to be wet, and there's a possibility of it getting wormy, and if it was wormy, it was invalid. It all kinds of very, like everything else in Judaism, tons and tons and tons of details. And then it says, regardless of how many sacrifices were being offered in the course of a given day, the fire on the altar was never to go out. That was the thing. It was actually a prohibition. One of the 365 prohibitions in the Torah is that the fire on the altar not go out. Okay, this is one of those prohibitions that even if you tried, if you tried to violate this commandment, you couldn't, because we don't have altars. We don't have fires on altars. We don't have a temple. So this is definitely something which has no one could possibly violate this commandment. And no one has been able to violate this commandment since the year 70, when the temple was destroyed. That's going on close to 2,000 years that we have not been able the opposite of violating a commandment is a prohibition. We've never been able to safeguard against this prohibition because it's just an impossibility. So it's 2,000 years of Jewish history where the commandment was not able to be done versus 1,200 years of Jewish history when it was. So we've already gone well past the time period of when Jews were able to safeguard against this commandment. So what's the deal here? With everything else in the Bible, we talk about this all the time. This is a reoccurring theme, the allegories which exist within the Bible, that any time it says any type of person, place, or thing, we're going to send it to thing now, in the Bible, it doesn't just mean that thing. Like this last week, we had the whole battle against the Amalekites, who were the progenitors of Haman, who was the antagonist in the book of Esther, the Purim story. And we're told that, okay, Amalek doesn't exist anymore. There's nobody who can stand up and say, I'm a descendant of Amalek. But Amalek means that has the numerical value, the word Amalek in Hebrew has the numerical value of the word doubt. So as soon as a person starts doubting in God, well, that's their Amalek who comes to cool you off as you try to get involved with your Judaism. That's like an understood, that's a well-known allegory. The altar is also an allegory for our persona, for, you might say, our hearts, our attitudes. And it says that the Eish HaMizbeach Tukad Bo Lo Sichbe, the fire on the altar should never go out, meaning to say that we should really always be excited about our Judaism, the five of fiery excitement. Similar to, we had this last week, we had the commandment of Machzis HaShekel, the giving of the half shekel. If you want to, you can go on to my Facebook page. We actually did it in Ferndale, had a nice small crowd. People were watching online. It was recorded. The first time my wife, thank you, may she live long and be healthy, came up with this idea. Why don't we have the half shekels, silver half shekels, why don't we do the mitzvah of giving the half shekels, and we invite people and we can do it, and people who never did it before, people never heard it, we explained it in great depth. And one of the things that it talks about, the giving of the half shekel, is that Moshe couldn't understand what was the significance. And it says in the Medrash that God reached under his throne of glory and pulled out a fiery coin. And Moses said, got it. Because the idea there, same thing, fiery, get excited. The word silver in Hebrew means to long for, to get, be excited about your Judaism. That's really where our altar is. That's what our sanctuary is all about. It's not a building made out of bricks and altars and sacrifices. That we're not doing that. That's not where we are up to these days. If we're going to show our commitment and we want to get closer, which the whole purpose of the sanctuary was to get closer to God, so we have to show our excitement. There's a converse way of looking at it as well, just by putting the punctuation just a little bit different place. The fire should burn on it. Should be always be set up on the altar. Lay sichpe. The no should be extinguished. Get rid of your opposition to Judaism. Anytime there's something good that has to be done and you don't feel like doing it, lay sichpe. Get rid of the no. That's another way of looking at it. Same idea. It is basically the same idea. Always be involved and excited, and look for ways. Because now we're coming up to Pesach, and the word the primary thought on Pesach is matzah, the unleavened bread that we eat. Matzah is spelled exactly the same way as mitzvahs. And we're told, the verse says, don't let your matzos become chametz, become leavened. Don't leave them over. Don't have them lying around. So you could read the same word, don't let your mitzvahs be lying around. The person has an opportunity, let him take it. We're going to take an opportunity right now to do our last commercial break and come out with a very interesting Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Would you like to get in touch with me? Just between you and me, easiest way, go to my website, rabbifinman.com, RABBIFINMAN. People ask me, is there two N's? And I say, yes, there are two N's in Finman, but not in the same place. They're at different ends of each syllable. Finman, fin like a fish, man like a homo sapien. RabbiFinman.com, right on the homepage. The contact link, you contact me. If you have any question, query, criticism, comment, whatever it is that you have to say, fine. It's a great thing. I appreciate it, and especially if you have something that you want to express how the show could be better, because I've incorporated many, many of those things. I mean, there are some recent things that people have been writing. It just, like, boosted the show right up, and we want to keep the show top-notch. And you're the ones who are doing it. You're the co-producers. So you listen to it. You're enjoying it. There's also archived editions of the radio show. Did you not get to hear the wine interview from last week, or I'm drawing a blank, but anyway, the biography went from the time before Dreyfus, excuse me. Yes. The Dreyfus interview from the week before, brain click kicked in. Thank you. Or any of the ones from before that. So some of these interviews, I've gone back and listened to them, and I've been very impressed with my interviewees and their knowledge and acumen and their excitement. Today's guest was very excited, very enthusiastic. It's when you have an enthusiastic interview, it becomes very contagious, and people get excited about things. And yeah, go out and get Not a Real Enemy, the true story of a Hungarian Jewish man's fight for freedom. Yeah, I think it reads like a novel. It's a great. And I was thinking about it. Who would he get to play? Like, you know, I don't know any of these movie stars anymore. I'm thinking, you know, going back to like, you know, Clark Gable, but that's, you know, he's not around anymore. So you'll also find other ways in which we present Judaism and the very important donations page. We could not be on the air for now close to 30 years were it not for your help. Yes, we do have sponsors, but the medium is expensive. And we have always, from day one, relied on listeners like yourself to help. You've been listening now for 50-something minutes, and you've gotten this far. I'm sure you're chomping at the bit to hear this story that I have to tell. And I would make this much shorter if I didn't have to do that. And I've always made the promise, now it's happened twice, that if we pay off the month before the end of the month, I don't do this. I don't ask for people to send in their contributions, their donations to the Jewish Hour. And you can do that by going to the donations page, and it's all very safe, and it's all your, you know, tax deductible, and it counts towards your Meiser, towards your tithing, and everybody appreciates it. You'll appreciate it. I'll appreciate it. The other listeners will appreciate it. God will appreciate it. Everybody appreciates when you do such a thing, and it doesn't have to be hundreds of thousands of dollars. It could be smaller donations. That's also good. Make it, you know, $5 a month for, you know, and do it like on a monthly basis. So that's $60 a year. That's a great thing. Do that today. RabbiFinman.com. Donations. The story, there was a certain Reb Zalman. And I went looking to find out who the last names were of the various principals in this story, and did not find any last names. So were it not for the fact that this story comes from someone who always authenticates his stories, I would have just passed right on it and said, yeah, it could have happened. Nice story. Anyway, so this Reb Zalman would always tell this story every year on Purim. Back in the day, we're talking mid-1800s, there was a decree issued by the Tsar as a way of getting Jews to give up their Judaism, where they would go into villages and they would snatch 12-year-old boys, conscript them into the army until they were 37. So here it is, they grow up, basically they grew up soldiers. They didn't grow up Jews. The plan didn't work. The Jews, very few of them gave up their Christianity, as we'll see by this story. And eventually, when this czar passed away, when this czar died, then the next czar said, we're not going to take 12-year-olds into the army anymore. It's just like, there's a lot. You can't have a 12-year-old in your army. It's just like a lot to do. So they just saw it was not cost-effective and it wasn't working, so they stopped. Baruch Hashem. But in a certain town, there was a child by the name of Matala. Matala is short for Matal, which is short for Mordechai. Just keep that in mind. So this Matala was a bit of a genius. He was very smart. And he got snatched. His mother's last words were, promise me, Matal, whatever they do to you, you never give up your Judaism. Promise. In the story, she says that she even gave him a pair of tefillin. Put these on when you get to, when you turn 13. Okay, a pair of tefillin. So Mazel was very smart, and a lot of the other kids not so smart. So the commanding officer, which was his regiment that was in charge of Matla, saw that this Matla was actually a very smart person, and he could be trusted to do various different things. And he became an assistant to the commander and not a confidant per se, but he would tell him to do these things and this personal thing. And at some point, the commander just said, "Listen, Matl, you could go very far. You could be a general. You could be a minister in the Tsar's cabinet. But you have an impediment. They don't let Jews do that." So he kept on refusing. "No, I'm Jewish. That's it. I'm not." So the commander tried everything. He tried, everything from chocolate to kicking. Let's put it that way. Nothing. He was complaining to another commander that he has this kid, brilliant, but he's just so stubborn he won't give up his Judaism. So the other commander says, "Give him to me. I have 5 boys tomorrow, or in 3 days, rather. I have 5 boys in 3 days that are accepting upon themselves the Russian Orthodoxy. We have the bishop coming. It's going to be a whole thing. He'll see that his friends are all becoming Christians. He'll also want to become a Christian." So it just so happened that at that day, so the commander needed something. He told Matl, "Go into town and get him a such and such." So Matl saw a synagogue, a small synagogue, and he went in there, and he was talking with somebody, and he was telling him who he was, what he was. And so somebody handed him a chumash. And in the back of the chumash, the 5 books of Moses, was the book of Esther. And he told him that the day after tomorrow is Purim. If he can't get to a Purim celebration, at least he should read the story of the book of Esther. So now the commander, when he gets back, tells them, "I'm transferring you to a different unit. You're going to this and this unit." So actually, he's very happy because he knows that there are other Jews in that unit. He's the only Jew in his unit, and he knows that there's other Jewish boys in that unit. Comes now Purim night, and he gets the 5 Jews together, and he says to them, "This is what I remember from last year." And he took out the book, and he started reading from the book of Esther, and he tried to sing it as best as he could remember. And some of the boys also, they remembered like different parts of how it's supposed to be sung. When he was done, the whole thing takes a half hour. When he was done, the boys were just like flabbergasted. And one of them it was like quiet. And then one of them started talking about how much fun they used to have on Purim. And then this one started, we used to do this on Purim. It's a Jewish celebration day. This on Purim, that on Purim, that on Purim. And they talked well into the night. And finally they concluded, "The conversions are off. We're not doing it." And indeed, when it came time now for them to convert, everybody was disappointed. They said, "We're not doing it." So instead of Matl converting, Mordechai, the Jew, made sure that they didn't give up their Judaism. That's going to do it for this week. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care. לא מפחדים. מה שהם לא מבינים זה שאנחנו משפחה שלעולם לא תיפרד או תוותר.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.